Great. Thanks, Nick. Hi, everyone. Thanks for inviting me to come talk here. So, this is based on joint work, actually a couple of papers, and together it's with Tom Bodanowitz, Elizabeth Crosson, Chinmay Nerke, who's in the audience, and Umesh Fazirani. So before I begin, I just wanted to get a sense of my audience today. So how many people here know what a QMA is, like the complexity class? Oh, good. And local Hamiltonians, probably. Okay, good. So, all right, so there's this talk that I'm giving today is actually a part one of a two-part series. Okay, so this talk will be on this paper called Approximate Low Weight Check Codes and Circuit Lower Bounds for Noisy Ground States. And then tomorrow, Chinmay is going to give a talk at over at IQC. That's the second part. And it'll be on a follow-up paper that focuses more on approximate quantum error correction. And both talks will be self-contained, but attending both talks will sort of give you a broader picture of this theme we're exploring. All right. So the motivation behind what I'm going to talk about today comes from a bunch of different things that, from complexity, from quantum information, from physics, that are all somehow related. So the first question is there a quantum analog of something called the classical PCP theorem? So this is the probabilistically checkable proofs theorem. The classical PCP theorem says that it is NP hard to find approximate solutions to constraint satisfaction problems, right? We know that it's NP hard to exactly solve them, and the PCP theorem says doing so, it's the same even if you want to solve it approximately. And there's a big open question in quantum information theory of whether there's a quantum analog. That's one question. The second question is really more of a theme, which is we would like to understand the complexity of entanglement in physical systems. This third question, which is a theme, which is we'd like to uncover deeper connections between quantum error correction and quantum computation. So a summary of the results that I'll talk about today. The first one is that we'll give a simple proof of a result by Lior Eldar and Aram Harrow from a couple years ago, who explore relaxation of this quantum PCP conjecture. So this is a very hard problem, it seems like. We're not quite sure how to prove the quantum PCP conjecture, but they tried to make a progress on this by looking at a relaxation. And this relaxation is aimed at a particular interesting feature of the quantum PCP conjecture, where you want to talk about the complexity of entanglement in ground states of local Hamiltonians. So their relaxation is based on considering different variants of the complexity of entanglement. And a byproduct of our simpler proof is that we get sort of an unexpected application to constructing approximate error correcting codes with linear rate and linear distance. So the starting point for us is to really think about this dictionary between classical complexity theory and quantum complexity theory. So in classical complexity, we often think about constraint satisfaction problems. And in the quantum world, these correspond to local Hamiltonians. Variables in CSPs correspond to qubits or particles. Clauses of CSPs correspond to local Hamiltonian terms. An assignment to variables in a CSP corresponds to a quantum state. The number of violated, if you have an assignment or a possible solution, the number of clauses that are violated by that solution a measure of solution quality corresponds to the energy of a quantum state for a local Hamiltonian. And then the respective complexity classes corresponding to trying to solve these constraint satisfaction problems, on one hand, it's NP in the classical world, and in the quantum world, this corresponds to the class QMA. So this is the dictionary that we'll sort of jump back and forth between. So let's put this, oh, well, first, just a quick review of what local Hamiltonians are. Probably everyone here knows. But here, I'll think of local Hamiltonians as being a collection of positive semi-definite matrices that act on a small number of qubits, k at a time. And then your local Hamiltonian is simply the sum of all these PSD matrices. And if you have a state, the energy of the state with respect to this local Hamiltonian is this this inner product between the state and the Hamiltonian. The ground energy of a local Hamiltonian is its minimum eigenvalue. And a ground state of a local Hamiltonian is an eigenvector with minimum eigenvalue. So that's just some review. So local Hamiltonians are used to describe physical systems. You know, we often like to think about ground states of local Hamiltonians, and they can be highly entangled. It's something that we're familiar with, and they might not have simple classical descriptions. Okay. And this feature is something that makes local Hamiltonians more interesting and more general than classical CSPs, right? It's something that's uniquely quantum. Okay. Another aspect of local Hamiltonians is that you can, you know, given a local Hamiltonian and given a state, you can efficiently check whether a state is a ground state. Okay. This gives rise to the notion of QMA, quantum Merlin-Arthur.
Sorry, what if you're not given the Hamiltonian? If you're just given the state and you ask, is it the ground state of a local Hamiltonian?
Mm-hmm.
There's some algorithm or some efficient algorithm to see whether it descends from a local Hamiltonian, or?
I think any state, right? You just pick a matrix with the smallest eigenvalue equals the eigenvalue.
No, but it needs to be local.
It was local.
Yeah, probably not easy. Yeah, in this setting, we usually think of the local Hamiltonian as being given to us, and then we just want to check that it has a low energy, you know, a small eigenvalue or not. And this problem is complete for QMA. It's the canonical complete problem for that class. So classically, the famous Cook-Levin theorem, proved in the 1970s, says that it's NP-hard to determine whether the minimum number of unsatisfied clauses in a three-sat instance is it's either zero, meaning that it's completely satisfiable, or at least one over poly n times the number of clauses. Okay. Or rather, I should talk about the fraction of unsatisfied clauses. So it's NP-hard to distinguish between these two numbers for a three-sat instance. The quantum analog is that it's QMA-hard to determine whether the minimum energy of a local Hamiltonian is at least is zero or at least one over polynomial. What the PCP theorem says is even if you wanted to determine whether the minimum number of unsatisfied clauses is zero or at least some epsilon m, okay, think of epsilon as some small constant like 1 over 10 or, you know, even a half, and m is the number of clauses in your three-sat instance, even distinguishing between these two large cases is still NP-hard. Okay. And the corresponding analog of this theorem in the quantum world would be to say, we don't know this is true, that it is QMA-hard to estimate the ground energy of a local Hamiltonian instance up to an additive error epsilon m. And this is a huge amount, right? M is, you know, the total norm of this Hamiltonian, right? And you're saying even to figure out whether the minimum eigenvalue is zero or this relatively large number should still be QMA-hard. So that's the translation and of the PCP theorem in the quantum world. And you know, it's more than just putting, you know, quantum in front of some cool classical topic. For example, you know, you can think of blockchain plus PCP as one possible combination. But it's more than that. And it's more than saying that some problem is regarding this approximating the minimum eigenvalue of local Hamiltonians as being computationally difficult. And this is something we already knew from the classical PCP theorem, like, you know, we know that there's, I mean, because CSPs are actually just a special case of local Hamiltonians. So, you know, so this we already know from the classical results, but proving the quantum PCB conjecture would actually say much more. So it would actually imply that there's some physical systems, some local Hamiltonians, where complex entanglement, in some sense, can persist at relatively high energies, like a constant fraction of the total possible energy. Yeah, and sort of, you know, this is interesting, you know, to people, you know, not just complexity theorists, because this is something that, you know, condensed matter theorists, for example, think about a lot. You know, what sorts of complicated entanglement can survive even at non-zero temperatures, at, say, room temperature? And the quantum PCB conjecture says that such exotic systems can exist. I mean, it's not something you see every day on the street where, you know, there's highly entangled systems at room temperature. But in some vague, you know, philosophical sense, that's what the quantum PCP conjecture is positing.
Is there something more precise we mean by complex entanglement?
Good question. This is exactly what I'm going to talk about. So what do I mean by complex entanglement? Right, there's many different measures of entanglement. You know, there's your familiar like entropy and things like that. But in this context, the way we want to think about complexity is something called the circuit complexity of a quantum state. So if you have a quantum state psi and, you know, n qubits, it could be highly entangled. You can talk about the minimum size of a quantum circuit that takes the all zero state and produces the state psi. And it's sort of like a Kolmogorov complexity of quantum states, if you're familiar with that idea. And so an interesting thing is that by accounting argument, if you pick a state at random, you know, a generic state on n qubits requires exponential circuit complexity. Okay. And this is something that's different than the classical world where, you know, any bit string on n bits has Kolmogorov complexity at most n. Okay, so there's some, you know, there's something more interesting going on here. And here, this is what a measure of complexity is going to be. And intuitively, if you have a state where any circuit that produces a state has super polynomial size, that kind of tells you that this state must have really complicated entanglement. You know, it's hard to get a handle on.
Sorry, but what's the what's the size here? Number of gates or something?
The number of gates, yeah. Or you can also talk about the circuit depth, like the minimum depth circuit.
You need to assume the gates that you're using.
Yeah, so
you allow for any unitary gain.
Right, so 2-qubit gates, right. You know, or gates that act on a constant number of qubits. So, you know, because of this difference between, you know, classical string complexity and quantum state complexity, this leads to a new type of question that you can ask, which is, if someone gives you a local Hamiltonian, what is the circuit complexity or the circuit depth of a ground state of that local Hamiltonian or of a low energy state? Okay, and like I said before, this question is uninteresting for classical CSPs because this number is always bounded by n, the number of variables, but, you know, can be exponential for local Hamiltonians. So if you assume a pretty natural complexity assumption, which is that the class NP is different from Q of A, then this tells you that, you know, the fact that the local Hamiltonians problem is QMA complete implies that local Hamiltonians can have ground states that don't have polynomial size descriptions that are classically checkable, right? Because if it was, then that means you can solve the local Hamiltonians problem using you know, a classical proof, right? A polynomial size classical proof on a classical computer. But that would contradict, you know, this assumption. And this quantum PCB conjecture would say that this is still true, even for, you know, states that have relatively high energies. That there are local Hamiltonians where, you know, if you go up to energy epsilon m, any state in this range would have very, you know, would have complex descriptions that are super polynomial in size. Okay. And, you know, this is sort of intuitively that they're complex physical systems with complicated entangled states. All right, so you know, this seems like a hard problem to try to tackle. And so back in 2014, Friedman and Hastings said, well, let's try to step back a moment and try to isolate this key difference between the classical PCP theorem and the quantum PCP conjecture. Let's take out, you know, QMA and NP out of the picture and just focus on quantum state complexity. So they formulated this conjecture called the no low energy trivial states conjecture, or NLTS. And it says that there exists a family of local Hamiltonians, right, such that any state with energy at most epsilon m above the ground state energy cannot be generated by a constant depth quantum circuit. So there's no mention of QMA or anything. It just talks about quantum state complexity. And it's a relaxation because it's a necessary consequence of quantum PCP. Right? If quantum PCP is true, then definitely there are local Hamiltonians with this property, but not necessarily the vice versa, because this is not saying that you can encode QMA hard problems in this family. But what they want is an explicit family of local Hamiltonians. And this conjecture is very interesting to people in like the condensed matter community, and it's still open. Still seems hard. All right, so since it's so hard, maybe let's try to relax it even further. And how might we relax it? Well, let's change this notion of approximation. So this low energy notion, it's some way of capturing an approximation of the ground space. Right? You approximate by saying things that have low energy. And Eldar and Harrow proposed a different notion of approximation, something they call low error. And what is this concept? So if you have a state psi and a local Hamiltonian H, then we say that the state psi has epsilon error with respect to this Hamiltonian if this state psi looks like some ground state of the Hamiltonian on, say, 99% of the qubits. Right? Meaning that, you know, here's your state psi. If you trace out this small fraction of qubits, like 1% of the qubits, the remaining qubits, the remaining density matrix, looks like it could have come from a bona fide ground state. So that's what I mean by low error. So does it make sense to everyone? All right, so it's you know, another way of thinking about it is sort of like the quantum Hamming distance between the state you have and some ground state is small.
But it has to be exact?
Has to be exact.
Is that important?
It's not important. It can be even up to trace distance. So.
And if this condition is true, then it does have low energy.
That's right. So
the kind of converse might not be true.
That's right. So it's a special type of low energy state. But it's saying just remove these and get something that looks like.
Also, do you require a translation invariance?
No assumptions on the local Hamiltonian, except, no assumption.
I mean, for quantum PCP, you're doing stuff without any dimension, right? It's infinite dimensional, physical dimension, spatial dimensions, right? So it's not,
right.
They're not geometrically local Hamiltonians, so translation invariance is not.
Good point. It could be spatially, geometrically local, but then we know those Hamiltonians won't be the interesting ones for quantum PCP.
And here you're asking one set S, or that for any set of at most epsilon n qubits, this holds?
There exists a set.
Or just one set.
Yeah, if you can locate some 1% such that if you throw it away, you get an imposter of a ground state, and it's low error.
And you're saying that if I relax that to the reduced animator, matrices look approximately the same, nothing changes?
So everything I'll talk about will sort of go through. So So with this relaxation, Eldar and Harrow were able to prove a theorem. They were, and they call it maybe not the best name, but they say it's the no low error trivial states theorem, or NLETS. And they say that you know, they can prove the existence of a family of local Hamiltonians such that any epsilon error state, so epsilon here is some constant like 1 over 10, requires log depth circuits. So in some sense, this sort of looks even stronger than what Friedman and Hastings were looking for. They were just looking for you know, circuit complexity where the depth is growing beyond constant. But here, they're able to prove a log depth lower bound. So it seems pretty good. And you know, as Daniel's pointing out, this NLETS theorem is a necessary consequence of quantum PCP because it's a necessary consequence of this NLTS conjecture. So it's another weakening. And their proof is pretty intricate. I mean, it's based on this these quantum expander codes by Tielik and Zimor. I think when it first came out, it was pretty exciting because maybe it said, well, maybe we're making some progress towards these hard questions, NLTS, quantum PCP. So you might ask, maybe are we closer to these conjectures? And our results, part one, you know, our first conclusion is that this NLETS, this low error notion is strictly weaker than NLTS. We kind of have an argument for saying that this low error relaxation is not really the right notion of approximation as far as NLTS or quantum PCP is concerned. Okay? And it's a little too easy, okay, in a sense that we'll see. So the first thing we're going to see is a simpler proof of this log n depth lower bound. And we're going to construct a family of one-dimensional Hamiltonians. One-dimensional meaning that the terms act nearest neighbor on a one-dimensional spin system. Okay. And already, because you know it's one-dimensional, it cannot be a Hamiltonian that proves the NLTS conjecture. And I'll talk about that later. And furthermore, we also get a log n depth lower bound for what we call noisy ground states. So these are, you know, not only low error states, but any convex combination of a low error state. So you can have a mixture of states where, you know, the place, this fraction of qubits where they disagree with the ground state can jump around. So let's talk about that. So here's the inspiration for the lower bound. But let's think about the cat state. Okay. And we think about it because we want an n qubit state that has, you know, large entanglement. Some sense, and so here, you know, here's a cat state. It's the equal superposition of n zeros plus n ones, and it's not too hard to prove that any circuit that generates the cat state requires depth log n. And you can prove this using some sort of like light cone argument. Right? So, you know, imagine that you had some circuit that takes a bunch of zeros and produces the cat state, and if its depth was less than log n, you can consider two observables that are separated far apart in your circuit, like A and B. And if the circuit was too shallow, then the results of the outcomes of A and measuring A and B are should be uncorrelated, right? Because there's no way for the information to propagate from one observable to another. But we know that this can't happen in the cat state. There are observables where even if you put them at opposite ends, you know, the outcomes are correlated, right? I mean, you know that if you measure zero on the first qubit, then you're going to measure zero on the last qubit. All right. And you know, not only that, but any state that is a low error state of the cat state, you know, any state that looks like the cat state in all but an epsilon fraction of qubits also must have a circuit depth log n, you know, by the same light cone argument. Nothing really changes. So the reason we can't really use the cat state as to prove this you know, NLTS theorem or the NLETS theorem is that it's not the unique ground state of any local Hamiltonian. It's not too hard to prove. Okay. But the idea here is maybe we can make it an approximate ground state of a local Hamiltonian. So the trick is, you know, let's think about a circuit that constructs a cat state. It doesn't have to be low depth. You know, so here's a simple circuit. You have one wire that Hadamards the first qubit, puts in the plus state, and then you just do a bunch of C naughts n times. Okay. That'll generate the cat state. It has depth n. But let's construct the Feynman-Kitaev you know, history state Hamiltonian corresponding to the circuit. So, you know, just a quick review of the history state construction. If you have any quantum circuit like this, you can construct a local Hamiltonian where it has a unique ground state that looks like this. We call them history states. It's a uniform superposition over all the time steps in your circuit. And you know, it's you keep track of that using a time step register, followed by a register that has the state of the computation at that time. You know, something we call a snapshot. Okay. And this Hamiltonian is called the history state Hamiltonian. It's five local or three local, depending on your favorite construction. And so let's do that. You know, the history state Hamiltonian for the circuit. And for the cat state circuit, the ground state, the unique ground state looks like the following. At time step t, you kind of have a partial cat state, right? Because after you've applied t c naught gates, you know, you have a cat state on those first t qubits, and then a bunch of zeros on the rest. And just using the same arguments as before, using this Lycone argument, you know, for this ground state, for this history state, any epsilon error state of this has circuit depth log. I mean, really, it's just a superposition over bigger and bigger cat states. And so, you know, you shouldn't be able to get away with a small depth circuit. Any questions about this? And you know, then we can sort of massage this into a one-dimensional Hamiltonian using sort of known techniques to make the history state Hamiltonian one-dimensional. And so this gives us the, you know, the simple proof of this Enlet's theorem. There exists a one-dimensional local Hamiltonian acting on three-dimensional particles, Q-trits, with three local interactions. Such that the circuit depth of any epsilon error state requires circuit depth, you know, log n. And this, you know, there's a version of this theorem where this holds even up to trace distance. Any circuit that produces a delta, something that's delta close to a ground state, or you know, to an epsilon error state, still requires roughly this depth.
So for this, can you choose basically any one of these circuit to Hamiltonian constructions? Like, could you have like this, the local ones, but you have also ones in lattices and so on? So
yeah.
Any of these will do, no?
Oh. Yeah, any of those will.
Do you know anything about the splitting between ground state and excited state here? Or?
Good question. So, so I think the. You mean the spectral gap.
Yeah.
So I think the spectral gap of these Feynman-Kitaev Hamiltonians is one over polynomial, like one over the roughly polynomial in the size of the circuit.
Okay.
So it's not gapped, mm-hmm. It vanishes, but it's still one over polynomial.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you know, this thing I mentioned before, this shows that there's a separation between NLTS and this NLETS. Because we know that any NLTS Hamiltonian, you know, the one that we really would like, can't be embedded in any low-dimensional geometry. And the reason is that if you had such a local Hamiltonian, you can take any ground state of that Hamiltonian and chop it up into small patches and consider the tensor product of the reduced density matrices on each of those patches. And this new state would have low energy because you're only snipping a small number of interaction terms, right? And so that doesn't increase your energy by too much. But this patchwork state now has low circuit complexity because each patch is constant size. So you can have a separate circuit creating each of these patches and put them in parallel. So spatially local, geometrically local Hamiltonians cannot be NLTS. Okay, so that was the simple proof of NLETs. But we can even go a little further, you know, to exploit this technique of using history state Hamiltonians. We can even get a super polynomial circuit size lower bound for noisy ground states. Not just a log depth lower bound, but a super polynomial circuit size. So here's a second result. If you make this plausible complexity assumption that QCMA is different from QMA, and I'll say what QCMA is in a bit. Then there's some epsilon and a family of local Hamiltonians such that any epsilon error state of these Hamiltonians requires super polynomial size circuits, you know, even up to trace distance a fifth. So what's QCMA? It's the class called quantum classical Merlin-Arthur. And it's the set of problems where it's like QMA, but instead of having a quantum proof, you're restricted to having a classical proof. Okay. But you can still check the answer using a quantum computer. Right. And a sort of a way to calibrate, you know, what this class talks about is here's a complete problem for it. You want to determine if the ground state of a local Hamiltonian not only has low energy, but also has polynomial-sized quantum circuits. So it's an additional constraint. So it's really talking about the class of local Hamiltonians where the ground states can be generated by small circuits. And this assumption that QCMA not equal to QMA would imply that generally the ground states of local Hamiltonians would require super polynomial complex circuits to build. And what our theorem says is that we can lift this assumption to say that this is still true even for approximations of ground states, for even noisy ground states. And another way to put it is that the complexity of ground state entanglement can be made robust to local noise. So the proof is, again, not too hard. Let's take a QMA verifier circuit C. So this is some quantum circuit. In some registers, it receives some witness state Xi, and it has some ancilla qubits. And it does some computation and decides whether to accept or reject. And we can think about the Feynman-Kitaev history state construction of a Hamiltonian for this circuit. And it's a local Hamiltonian that's degenerate. It doesn't have a unique ground state. But all ground states still look like a history state, where the initial snapshot, psi sub zero, the state at the initial time, is equal to some witness state tensored with ancillas. And so if you assume that QCMA is different from QMA, then it would say that generally for these history states, this initial state Ksi would have a very high complexity. And so our goal for this this theorem is to make history states resilient to noise. And so the first idea is, we have lots of techniques for making quantum information resilient to noise. Let's use quantum error correcting codes. And so we want to take some k qubits, like this history state, and maybe encode it into n qubits. And if this encoding, this enk is an encoding map of a good quantum error correcting code, then if you have a small number of errors on this encoding, then you can recover the initial state. So if this state psi is the history state that contains some complex witness ksi, then this new encoding also has noise robust complexity, right? Because any errors on this encoding allows you to recover psi, which allows you to recover the witness. But sort of the problem with this is that we don't know of any codes with linear distance where the encoding is also the ground state of a local Hamiltonian. So we don't immediately, you know, we can't just apply error correction black box. But let's try a second idea. Let's encode the information inside the history state. So let's think about a new circuit. So we have our original QMA verifier circuit C. But before we run this verification, we're going to do something kind of silly. We're going to take this witness state Kasai and the bunch of ancillas and encode it in some good error correcting code. So we'll apply some encoding circuit. And then we're going to wait a long time, just do nothing, just apply identity gates. And then after we're done waiting, we're going to decode and then apply the verification. So you can see that I haven't really done anything. I've just encoded, decoded, and then done the original computation. But now there's some nice features for this, this new circuit. So, let's make the waiting period much larger than the total time needed to encode, decode, and do the verification. So a cool feature of this new circuit is that if you sample a time step at random, with high probability, where are we going to sit? We're going to sit in this waiting period. So the snapshot psi sub t is going to be an encoded version of our witness state. Okay. And now if you think about the Feynman-Kataev Hamiltonian corresponding to this new circuit, this circuit C prime, the ground states kind of protect the witness state from noise. And we also have a local Hamiltonian corresponding to this set, because we just use a history state. Right, so just to sort of spell it out, you know, history states of this new circuit of corresponding to this new Hamiltonian have this, you know, the same form. And we notice one thing. If you take a history state and trace out the clock register, it's going to be a uniform mixture of these time steps. But like I said, with high probability, most of the time steps are going to look like this encoding, right? And since we know that this encoding is protected by noise, this also implies that the original history state is protected by noise. And so if Kasai has super polynomial complexity, so do noisy versions of this history state. That proves our theorem. So to get our family local Hamiltonians, you just take the set of all QMA verifiers, you add this baby version of fault tolerance to get these new QMA verifier C prime, and then you just apply a history Hamiltonian to it. All right, so back to this question of low energy versus low error. So the thing we started with was we were interested in low energy states. And this was the focus of the NLTS conjecture and these quantum PCB conjectures. And we had this relaxation where we talked about states that mimic a ground state on some 1 minus epsilon fraction of qubits. And this is what the NLETS theorem talks about. And because of the previous two results, this approximate cat state example and the super polynomial lower bound, it seems that NLETS is pretty far from NLTS for a couple reasons. One is that, all the Hamiltonians we came up with could be embedded in low dimensions. And also the techniques are kind of simple, right? And we don't expect NLTS or quantum PCP to fall to such simple techniques. Maybe that's a little kind of pessimistic, but it certainly seems that way. So then we might ask, is this notion of low error or noisy ground states good for anything? Are these techniques good for anything other than sort of saying that NLETS is maybe not that useful? And so the second you know, our second batch of results says that, well, if you look at it, this notion of low error or noisy ground states is the canonical error model for error correction, right? It's the natural notion of approximation that comes up when you think about error correcting codes. Right? Because we're saying that you have some state that looks like the one you want, except for some fraction of qubits, right? And that's the model you think about in error correction. So these history state techniques might be interesting from an error correction point of view. Yeah.
But here I go back to the question I asked. So this fraction is, you pick the subset. But in error correction, you assume that you know any subset.
Right.
Destroyed. So I think it's very different, no?
But in error correction, you know there's, I mean, the subsets can be anywhere, but you know there's one subset. And that's the same thing with, so for us, like, it can be any subset, but there's only one. You know, there is some 1% that's corrupted. You don't know where.
You have the same quantifier, it's just in a different place here, right? Just because you have any state that's close to the ground state.
Right, so our definition of low error state is that...
The definition of low error state doesn't have the for all quantifier, but then n lets... theorem does, right? It says that for all states
mm-hmm.
that are epsilon far.
Yes.
So that's where you're getting all the possible sets.
Mm-hmm. I see.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So our third result is that, in fact, these history state techniques do allow us to construct an interesting family of approximate error correcting codes with good parameters. So this result says that there's a family of approximate codes, C sub n, where the code, you know, that C sub n, it's the ground space of a frustration-free seven local Hamiltonian on n qubits. It has approximation error delta, which scales 1 over polynomial in the number of qubits. And it can encode a linear number of logical qubits into n physical qubits, and the distance is also linear. So as far as coding properties go, it looks pretty good.
Sorry, can I just ask what frustration free means?
Right, so it means that it's the ground space is the ground space of every term individually.
Okay.
And furthermore, it's polynomial time encodable and decodable.
What's polynomial?
Huh? Oh, I'd rather not say. It's because I don't know. Yeah.
So it's not constructive.
This one is, there's a brute force over things of size log n. But aside from that, it is constructive. Basically, if you had a stabilizer code, actually it doesn't matter if it's stabilizer, any quantum error correcting code that's not necessarily local, but it has polynomial time encoding and decoding, then it would sort of just fit right in, and you'll see how. So just a quick a recap of what approximate error correcting code is, and I think people have seen this a lot recently. It's a subspace of n qubits, such that for all error, there is a recovery map where if any error happens on your code word, you can recover your original code word up to, say, trace distance delta. So let's use that as our definition of approximate code.
What were the errors in your code? What was the noise model?
This is worst case.
What you're encoding to protect against what? Probably said it already.
You mean for this result?
What kind of errors can happen?
Any error, basically any quantum operation on at most distance over 2 qubits. Okay, so just to sort of motivate why this result might be interesting, there's three major parameters of a quantum error correcting code that we like to care about. So one is the distance, right? How many errors can be corrected? And again, it's in this worst case model. Right? You get to attack some number of qubits with anything you like. We care about the rate, which is how many logical qubits can be encoded per physical qubit. And also some notion of locality, which is a little more vague than distance and rate. It means different things to different people. But here are some ways, some definitions of it. You know, you can say that a code is local if the code space is somehow specified locally, or if errors can be detected locally or corrected locally. For stabilizer codes, locality sort of is defined as the weight of the stabilizer generators for your code. And you know, having local codes is very desirable, both from a practical and a theoretical point of view. You know, for example, if you want to make syndrome measurements, you want to measure as few qubits as possible. Right? You know, in the world of quantum error correction, the codes that people think about most are these stabilizer codes. And here's sort of a very, very brief survey of some codes and the parameters they can achieve. So maybe the prototypical one is this toric code that we all study in quantum 101. So this is a code where it encodes a constant number of logical qubits, okay, into n physical qubits. Its locality is constant. Right? Because all the stabilizer generators act on, you know, the edges of your lattice, and the distance is square root n. And you know, since then people have been trying to come up with codes that achieve a better trade-off of parameters. You know, if you want, as far as we know today, if you want a linear number of logical qubits and linear distance, then the best codes we have locality. Linear. Somehow we don't know. I mean, a big open question is, can we have these two and have very small locality? Right, that's the dream. And people have tried to do these things, tried to improve the parameters along these lines. You know, there's a work of Friedman, Meyer, and Lowe from like early 2000s, where they're able to improve on the toric code just by a little bit. They have square root n for the distance times a logarithmic factor. Ravi and Hastings said, well, let's allow the locality to grow as square root n, and here we can get this linear distance. But somehow there seems to be, you know, whenever you try to improve a parameter somewhere, the carpet like pops up in the other part of the room, and we don't really know how to do much better than this for stabilizer codes. And again, you know, there's this dream of getting n constant for locality. So what about going beyond stabilizer codes, right? And this is starting to venture in a realm of codes where, you know, people haven't thought about it as much. There's a work by Dave Bacon, Steve Flamia, Harrow, and Shi, where they construct a subsystem code that does seem to get pretty good parameters. So they can have a code that encodes a linear number of logical qubits. The distance is nearly linear. Yeah, you might as well think about it as linear. And it has constant locality. And what does locality mean for these subsystem codes? Well, they're defined to be something called the weight of the gauge generators. And whether you should think of this as a local code or not, I think maybe you can argue for and against. Yeah.
So is it possible to have constant number of logical qubit, a linear distance, and a constant locality?
We don't know of any codes like that.
Okay. How does your logical operator look like for your code?
Oh, we don't have any logical operators.
Yeah.
They're quite non-local.
How does the stabilizer size, stabilizer generator size scale for Bacon? Because gauge operators are local,
right?
But the stabilizer operators.
Oh, I think they're
like n.
They're linear. Okay. I mean, they're very large. Yeah.
Just double checking the locality doesn't depend on epsilon, right?
I don't think so.
Sorry.
So if you don't have your logical operator yet, so it seems the motivation of your work is kind of like the quantum PCP theory and not for quantum computing, right?
Yeah, our codes are definitely not useful. It's more of a, along the lines of just saying, like, it's an existential result, saying that, look, you know, we can, I mean, people like to try to construct locally defined codes, and in some sense, well, that's what we create, a locally defined codes with good parameters, but now the question is, well, what more do you want? And of course, you can want, you know, small logical operators and things like that. Okay, so, sorry, so this is subsystem code. We talked about stabilizer codes. And one question is, well, is there a general notion of locality for quantum codes that isn't tied to whether we're talking about stabilizer codes or subsystem codes or something else? And a possible answer, and I think this is something that a lot of people have been thinking about recently, is, well, let's define it in terms of local Hamiltonians. So let's define the locality of a quantum code as, you know, a code is just a subspace of n qubits, right? So it, the locality is the minimum weight L such that your code is the ground space of some L local Hamiltonian. So it's a, so let's say that's our definition of locality in general. And sort of, you know, there's this really nice connection between codes and Hamiltonians. Codes have been a rich source of local Hamiltonians. For example, stabilizer codes are ground spaces of commuting Hamiltonians that have all these nice properties. Subsystem codes don't give rise to as nice Hamiltonians. They give rise to frustrated, non-commuting Hamiltonians. The codes we construct sort of try to go the other way. We try to start with tools from Hamiltonian complexity to create new codes. And like I said, our code Hamiltonians are non-commuting, right? But they're frustration-free. So in some sense, membership in the code space can be checked locally.
So if you have a subsystem code, I mean, the code, it's not really a single space, but kind of any of the gate fixed spaces are not necessarily ground states of the subsystem Hamiltonian, right?
So I know very little about subsystem codes. But,
okay.
It depends how you define your subsystem Hamiltonian.
I don't think it does actually, but we can discuss it later.
Yeah, actually, I'd like to learn more about that. Okay, so just to, you know, again, what's the proof of, what's the, how does the construction work? We're just going to use the same trick as with our super polynomial lower bound. So fix an encoding map of a good quantum error correcting code. Doesn't have to be local. So let's take the one that has linear distance, linear rate, or you know, linear logical qubits, and linear locality. And let's think about this, the encoding circuit of this. So the circuit takes in a bunch of ancillas. It takes in the logical qubits and encodes it. And then it just spends a long time just doing nothing. So if you think about the history state Hamiltonian of this, you know, the history state essentially looks like the encoding of psi on most of its weight, right? And that's because you're spending most of your time in the encoded state. So if you take a history state, it looks like some state tau, which is, corresponds to the time register, tensor, the encoding you want. But now this thing is the ground state of some local Hamiltonian. But that's basically the idea. Okay. And you can argue that if you have any error channel on this history state that acts on, you know, d over 2 qubits, you can recover from it and recover the original encoded information by appealing to the recovery map of your this good code that you started with. And you know, the reason approximation comes in is because your history state isn't exactly the encoded state you want. There's some tiny fraction which corresponds to this part where it's in the process of encoding your state, and this is the part that makes it approximate. Okay, so good. Just a quick summary of all the things I talked about. We started with this dictionary that, you know, local Hamiltonians are like quantum CSPs. There's this outstanding conjecture, NLTS, that says that low energy states of local Hamiltonians can have complex entanglement. And there's this relaxation where we talk about low error states. And there's a corresponding conjecture that you can formulate there, which you can prove very easily. And in some sense, that notion of low error is a little too weak to really attack these conjectures. But it's the right notion for quantum error correction. And we can use these techniques to construct Hamiltonians whose ground space is a good approximate error correcting code. And finally, some questions. What are other interesting notions of approximation of the ground space? Okay. Are there other interesting special cases of this notion of low energy? You know, maybe we can formulate a weakening of NLTS there. And other than that, you know, so now we're starting to free ourselves from this constraint of exact error correction, a theme that, you know, we've been thinking about a lot recently. And we also like to go beyond stabilizer codes to allow us to get, you know, more things than what was previously done. So what else can we do? And you know, what are other good notions of code locality? What properties do we want?
Sorry, I'm a bit confused about the code locality. It seems that the locality in stabilized code is consistent with k-local Hamiltonian and consistent with local quantum error correction codes. But I'm not sure if we consider quantum error correction codes, holographic quantum error correction codes, whether it is related to locality in gravity.
So this is something I know nothing about.
Graham, do you know about it?
I would have to think for a sec.
I mean,
stabilizer being the locality of the space time itself.
Yeah.
The extension networks.
No, but the tensors are local, but the stabilizer generators are definitely not.
No, you can do subsystem code like you could be a bunch of Ethiopia's and then project into random clickhold, random states, right? So it's like D plus one dimensional subsystem code in that sense. It's local.
So it's a local subsystem code?
Other questions? All right, let's thank our speaker again.